In an hour in Book Club, Alan Hollinghurst talks about his Man Booker Prize winner, The Line of Beauty. But now the classic serial, the second part of Nicholas Montserrat's The Cruel Sea. It's 1942, Compass Rose is escorting a convoy bound for Liverpool, but her engines have broken down, and now she drifts alone in the waters where so many lives were lost.
Every U-boat for miles must be able to hear us.
Fuel pipes blocked. They've got to work through each section, straighten it out, clear it, and then hammer it back in a shape.
Well, at least the captain's got the lifeboats and rafts ready to lower. Oh, I hate this.
Put your voice down. Think what it must be like with they poor buggers. Four decks down, working to fix it. If a torpedo strikes, at least we got a chance of getting overboard.
Seen Lieutenant Ferriby.
Ah.
Go and doodle Ali, I reckon. I'll have to handle the death charges.
That is what you always wanted.
Bloody officers.
How's the crew, number one?
Nervous, sir. You've seen Ferriby?
Yes.
Staring into space, refusing to go below. Should I speak with him?
No. In situations like this, it's best to ignore behaviour like that. I'll deal with him later. Poor man should never have been in the Navy in the first place. What's his leading seaman like?
Wainwright. Very competent.
We waited through every second of an unending night, wincing at each hammer blow.
Surprised U-boats ain't popping to the surface. Got a plane and we're keeping them awake.
Finally, 2 hours before dawn, they restarted the engines. We raced through the silent, freezing waters. The sun rose on a mist-covered sea. Then, when we were only 20 miles behind the convoy...
Sir?
Yes?
Suppose it's nothing. Convoy's on the screen, but just behind it there's this tiny echo.
What do you think it is?
It's not going away. Typical position a U-boat might take.
Perhaps it's just a back echo of the ships.
I don't think so. Wrong angle.
Right.
Captain, sorry to disturb you. There's something you should see.
That's all you've seen, number one. Probably a straggler.
It's a lot smaller than the other ships.
About the size of a small boat, sir. Or a submarine's conning tower.
Nothing wrong with your set, is there?
No, sir. She's on top line.
Sound action stations.
Full ahead! 10 degrees to starboard.
Haskins, set primers on depth charges.
You the boss now?
Yes, Haskins, I am.
Aye, aye.
Paulson, get those safety lashings off.
Wait, mate, what's going on?
Preparing depth charges for firing, sir.
What's happened?
I believe they've sighted a submarine, sir.
Submarine?
Yes, just stand over there, sir. Don't you worry, I'll deal with it.
Yeah, but I'm going to be in charge of this.
I'll deal with it, sir. Yeah. Paulson, those lashings off.
Right, Miss Hans. I know you're all tired and feeling sorry for yourselves, but that's going to change. Isn't it, Gunner Stevens?
It is, sir.
Gunner Hendrickson?
Yes, sir.
Right, for years, they bastards down there have been slaughtering us. Today, if we get our gunnery right, we even it up.
Still there on the screen?
Same place. Keeping station. Submarine! Athena!
And suddenly the mists lifted, and there she was, 7 miles ahead of us.
And he's looking ahead at the convoy.
Engine room, every ounce of speed you've got.
Compass Rose leaps across the waves. Still, the man stares ahead, intent on his prey.
Caught him with his trousers down.
Shall we try the gun, sir?
It's a long shot.
He could look around at any second.
You're right. It's worth a go.
The captain signals the gun crew. They fire immediately. It's a great shot, but falls 30 yards over. The man in the tower jumps a foot.
This time, lads! Breach cleared!
Breach cleared!
Shell home!
Shell home!
Fire!
Have they hit her?
20 yards short, sir.
Damn.
The man in the conning tower has vanished faster than a rabbit down a rabbit hole. The U-boat crash dives. Whether the third hits, we cannot see, as the sub disappears in a flurry of water.
What's on the Aztec?
Move it quickly right. Steer 20 degrees starboard. Prepare to fire!
Fire at your command!
Take button! Fire!
We got her!
All eyes shoot astern, expecting to see a stricken U-boat shooting up. Bits and pieces. But nothing.
What happened, number one?
Not sure, sir. Ah, there she is! Must have turned to port at the last second. Bring her round full to port!
This time there is no mistake. They fall right on top of her. And as we turn, wreckage, woodwork, life jackets come shooting to the surface.
We've got her! We've got the first
day! A kill, number one! At last we've got a kill!
Congratulations!
Cock engines!
And we drifted into the midst of the carnage. Great black oil warming up from the depths. And other things, too.
3 years. 3 bloody years it took us.
One down for all the ones us lost, right?
Right.
What is that you pulling up in that bucket, Weenie?
Something the Admiralty requires before confirming a kill.
Good God.
Bits of the human body you've never seen and never hoped to see. Whoa. Christ almighty, we're here!
A terrible banshee wailing rises from the engine room voice pipe. Sounds so vivid I can see the men jam-packed down there, eaten in an inferno of flame and scalding steam.
Look out! Snap out of it! Shut that voice pipe!
Yes, sir.
Lower the boats. Get the rafts in the water.
Sir!
Already Compass Rose lists dramatically, her bows submerged. Those who survived the explosion cluster around the lifeboats, desperately trying to lower them, but the list is so sharp, their hoists jam.
What are you doing, Seaman?
My duty, sir. Defusing the depth charges so they don't explode when she sinks and blows all to kingdom come. It's your job too, isn't it, sir? Isn't it, sir?
Yes, Wainwright, it is!
Right! Just pull out the primers and we'll all get home safe. I'm off, lad!
Some jump straight away. Others hesitate. Then, as she rolls, start sliding over the rough hull, the barnacles ripping their bodies and genitals.
Come on, number one!
Yes, sir!
Only two rafts survive the sinking. Perhaps half the crew make it to them. Some clamber on board, others huddle round, clutching the safety ropes.
What are the charges? Are they being picked up, sir?
Well, if anyone spotted us on their radar, then noticed we disappeared again and worked out what happened, we'd have a chance. Who's providing they can spare an escort from the convoy?
Like us and Sorrel.
Yes.
Oh.
Night bites. Oil in the frozen sea eat into us. Men die. Some are there 1 minute, floated away the next. In the dark, fights break out over who has a handhold on some wreckage. Others strangle to death as the ropes they hang on to wrap around their necks. On my raft, I keep men awake with nursery rhymes.
One potato, two potato, three potato, four. Seaman Stevens, keep up. Five potato, six potato, seven potato, one. One potato.
On the captain's raft, they strike up the Harlot of Jerusalem. Sex and death, those old familiars. Seaman Greg, married of the parish of Stepney. Cradles Lieutenant Ferriby, married of the parish of Brixton, in his arms.
I shall get home, Lieutenant. I shall. Second of all, cradle my babs proper. No council busybody won't never steal him. Stick him into orphanage. Lieutenant?
Leave me alone.
Remember you told me about your family? What will you play with your kids when you get home?
I want to sleep.
I think I'll allow that.
But in the end, it's not Ferriby who dies, but Greg, his child fated for the orphanage. Phillips dies, so he'll never buy his South Devon pub and love his barmaid's warm breasts. Gunner Stevens, who caught his hand in the gun breach, dies. Stoker Donnelly, the man mountain, rolls over in the freezing waters, docile as an infant, falls asleep. Human flesh, which for so long you've crammed up against, intimately pushed through in crowded companionways, dies. An ever-widening circle of dead float amid the parts of those who died in the U-boat, then, spiralling out, intermingle with the remains of those lost on our convoy south. Finally, in the dawn, Viperus finds us, 11 men on the ocean wave.
Number one.
Captain.
Sit down.
Waiter.
Yes, sir.
I think we should have a drink. What's yours?
G&T, I think.
Good. Make that two large ones.
Yes, sir.
Good to see you again, number one. What have you been up to?
Well, for the last 2 months, nothing, sir. Living in a room here in London, going to the odd show, trying to read a book, changing my socks.
Fitting back into everyday life. It's difficult, isn't it? After what we went through. Have you seen anyone from Compass Rose?
Went to see Ferriby in hospital. Awful. He was raving. Doubt he'll ever recover. The worst bit was that as I was leaving, I saw his young wife coming toward me at the corridor, jutting her brave little jaw, setting herself for the visit. I thought, you poor girl, what a life you've got ahead.
Two gin and tonics, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Incidentally, sir, congratulations on your promotion. Commander.
Yes. Lockhart.
Sir?
know what the most difficult part of being a captain is?
Sir?
You're an actor. You feel like some cheap hack in an awful provincial touring company, endlessly playing the same wooden role. Stand on that bloody bridge without the foggiest what the right decision might be. Half the facts needed to make it you don't have, and the other half you can only guess at. Yet you must stand there, steady as the rock of Gibraltar, giving precise, perfect orders, night after night, week after week. And never once can you be honest or close with anyone.
I sort of worked that out, sir. I've been watching you a long time.
What have you got out of the Navy lockup, if anything?
I suppose a great deal.
Really? I thought you rather enjoyed being a writer.
Well, I never really had any real success. I held vaguely socialistic theories of human goodness. Everyone working for the common good. But here, in the Navy, in a war, that's how you have to behave. You all have to work together, or all classes as one, or you're dead. In peacetime, you see people at their worst, their greediest. In war, you see them at their best.
War does involve killing rather a lot of people.
I even like the discipline. The self-discipline. I suppose I'm a bit of a Puritan.
Probably guessed why I invited you here.
No.
I'm not the only one who's been promoted. I managed to wangle you up to Lieutenant Commander.
What? Lieutenant Commander?
It means you could get your own ship. But I was hoping you'd stay with me. I'm to command an escort group. I'll need someone to run my ship.
You want me to be second in command of a whole escort?
Promotion in wartime is fast. If you survive, the top brass tend to think you must be of some use. Well?
With too many G&Ts inside, I blundered across London. Stopped in a couple of pubs in Fitzrovia I used to haunt, but I didn't recognise a soul. Somehow or other, I ended up sitting in a packed audience at the National Gallery listening to Myra Hess playing Chopin. Thing is, you're on board a ship like Compass Rose, absolutely cram-packed with other humans, and you stop really being yourself. You all become one intimate being, moving as one, thinking as one. Then suddenly, most of you are dead. Bang. And you're expected to join into an exactly similar intimate group of human beings who, any second... I started to listen to the music. It was exquisite. Hot tears start streaming down my face. I sob and blubber. People stare. Some bloody civilian woman starts tut-tutting and staring at me like I'm a circus freak. I blunder out. I sobered up staring at Holbein's portrait of Henry VIII. Thank God I never had to serve under him. But I still couldn't decide on my captain's offer. In the meantime, I rekindled my love of London, watched with affection as once more the old painted whore rattled herself up one last time for a fancy man with money. This time, hordes of American GIs waving dollars. One evening, I went to a variety show. The usual comedians, jugglers, dancing girls. Several rows back, there was a group of young RAF officers, each with a beautiful girl at his side. Then I looked closer. Each man's face had been hideously scarred. Hardly a face at all, a sort of distorted lump of gristle. And yet the girls, young, beautiful girls, were looking full into their faces with love and affection and flirtation. Brave girls. Even braver men. I thought, the least I can do is show some loyalty. I got on the train to Glasgow.
Lieutenant Wainwright.
Sir?
Lieutenant Rakes. Sir. Good to see you again, Wainwright. You've completed your courses.
Top of the class, sir.
You'll be running the ship's electronics, radar, sonar, signalling.
Very good, sir.
Still got the same politics you had on Compass Rose, turn us all into Bolsheviks.
Of course, sir.
You, Rakes, you're running gunnery.
That's right, sir. Just finished my course at King Alfred's.
Where are you from?
West Bromwich.
What were you before you joined up?
A vacuum cleaner salesman. Oh, and a conservative councillor.
Oh, dear.
Again, the Glasgow shipyards, row on row of ships frantically being built day and night. Ours was a new type, a frigate, HMS Salt Hash. In between form filling and store stowing, talking to naval engineers and getting to know a whole new raft of officers and men, twice as many as on Compass Rose, I paid a visit to the North Atlantic Naval HQ, partly to collect sealed orders, partly to get up to speed. In wartime, 4 months is an eternity. Endless corridors. Then, at last, a senior Wren officer at a desk.
Yes, yes, of course. No, I understand. Goodbye.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I was wondering...
Yes?
I was wondering if I could have a look around the command centres. Plotting tables, catch up on what's happening in the North Atlantic.
Information like that is restricted.
Yes, of course. But I've been out of the frame for 4 months. I need to catch up.
We have all sorts of people coming in here. What ship are you?
Not that it's any of your damn business. Salt Hash.
We stared at each other, her eyes grey, almost wolfish. Then suddenly she changed, almost blushed.
Gosh, I'm sorry. I've just realised who you are. You got that sub and then you were sunk. It's just we get all sorts wandering in.
That doesn't matter. But does it give me a chance of looking around?
Of course, of course. In fact, I'll take you round myself.
Thank you.
Come this way.
Over the next 10 minutes, as we toured the control rooms, the plotting tables, I got the general impression that things had slightly improved, that we were outbuilding them ship for ship, and that Second Officer Hallam was the most beautiful woman I'd ever met. And so once again I found myself on the North Atlantic, gingerly feeling my way back into the routines and rituals of comradeship.
Starboard 10.
Starboard 10, sir.
Steer 135.
Steer 135, sir.
Zigzagging back and forth just before dawn. Only this time, being in command, we were in front, the convoy stretching far behind.
Number one.
Morning, sir. Coco?
Nope. Anything I haven't seen in the signals?
A routine one about change of ciphers, sir. Oh, and Pergola came through on RT. One of the merchant ships was showing a stern light.
When was this?
3 hours ago. They extinguished it immediately.
Why didn't you tell me? You know my standing orders.
I thought I'd let you sleep.
I'm not here to sleep. Anything that happens at sea to an escort, a ship in convoy, to this ship, you report to me at once.
Yes, sir.
In the old days, he lost his rag about things that happened on our ship. Now he had responsibility for every ship in the convoy. It wasn't his job to be civil, amusing. It was his job to get every last ship home to port. Age was visibly eating into him. For years we'd been doing this job, traipsing back and forth across Atlantic wastes, devotees in some bizarre ritual whose meaning all had forgotten. His rages never lasted.
Think I'll have that cocoa, number one.
Which is the closest he ever got to an apology.
Get the captain some cocoa. Yeah.
It's a different sort of war now, number one.
Sir?
There just doesn't seem to be room for individual people anymore. It's all machines, weapons and routines and hardness. That seaman. Who is he? On Compass Rose, I'd have known his name, his family. Joke with him about his football team. If I got that seaman Greg now, the poor boy with the wife and child in Stepney, I'd throw him straight in the slammer. No second thought. Ferriby would be court-martialed. All I care about a person is he does his job efficiently.
It's what the war requires, sir.
Yes, number one. What the war requires.
A dinghy, sailing up Holy Loch on a summer's day, with hills alight with heather all around us. Staff officer in charge of operations, Julie Hallam, in slacks and yellow shirt. Not a touch of naval blue anywhere. Her bare feet trailing in the water.
Oh, this is positively indecent.
Thank God.
After that farewell party on Salthash before you sailed, which for some reason or other you'd invited me to, at which I had almost had to throw myself at you in order to get your attention.
You were so besieged by admirers I couldn't get through. I was on a mission offering cold sausage rolls to loud admirals.
On that long walk back to my lodgings afterwards, what was it you went on and on about in that impossibly prim and prissy way you have?
I have a Puritan background.
Yes. The impossibility of ever having a relationship with any girl, woman, or thing even half resembling a member of the opposite sex.
Yeah, well, I still partly feel that. If you've got a girlfriend, a wife at home, especially if there's problems between you. Boom, coming over. Oh. How can you concentrate on your duties? I've seen men torn to pieces by it. You can't allow it in the middle of a war.
And yet now, what is this symbol of ultimate degeneracy I see before my eyes?
Your subtle, gentle, ash-grey eyes.
A hamper. Not just any hamper, but one stuffed with pork pies, cheeses, bottles of beer, and a punnet of strawberries. The last days of Rome.
I don't know where I could have mislaid my Puritanism.
We drew up the boat on a distant, deserted shore, like two characters out of a children's adventure book. Laid out a cloth and a picnic under a small tree.
A slice of pork pie, please.
And, could you pass the pickle?
We talked about beekeeping, a novel we'd both recently read, Lunar Eclipses, anything other than the war. To be close to. To be almost touching something so strange, so rare.
Bill.
Julie?
You know I've been ribbing you about your standoffishness.
I had noticed.
Well, I know this is a beautiful day. A perfect fantasy.
What are you saying?
You're not the only one with difficulties. I mean, in my job I spend my life fighting off men. Not that many of them would interest me anyhow.
That's a relief.
But my uniform is my shield. I am doing my job. A full-time, highly responsible job, and after a while it becomes easier, more natural to be in uniform than in civvies. You know what I'm talking about.
The bloody war.
I just need time. To become human. Uncelibate.
Uncelibate. I like that.
What do you think?
I'm shocked.
You're shocked?
Delighted, even. That you could think there's something worth moving towards between us.
Oh.
But is a kiss entirely out of the question?
Bill, take care.
We were sent to the coldest place on Earth. If you're in the water for 2 minutes, you die. Where a continuous blizzard of ice screams down on you out of the north, and so much snow can freeze to your deck you become top-heavy and roll over.
How's this compare with selling vacuum cleaners, Lieutenant Riggs? If I could switch lines to Igloo, sir, I'd make a killing.
A convoy round the North Cape to resupply Russia. For 6 days, we were pounded by German dive bombers, torpedo boats, destroyers, losing many ships. And then this storm. Huge waves, a mile from crest to crest, roared down. Sometimes the whole surface of the water would be torn bodily off, skim through the air and slice into bridges and superstructure, snatching men off into nothingness. In such conditions, the convoy lost all shape and contact. Small groups of ships spread out over 200 miles.
How many merchantmen are left in our group, number one?
Only four, sir. I'm afraid we lost touch with that American tanker overnight.
Why?
In these conditions, it was impossible to maintain contact.
Not good enough. Not good enough!
Has there ever been a time when he's not been bad-tempered? His job isn't to be nice. It's to keep us on our toes.
He's still a bastard.
Finally, the Arctic hurricane abated, but only to a normal force 10 gale. The convoy slowly regrouped, but then, suddenly, unbelievably in such conditions, a merchantman was torpedoed.
Ship torpedoed to port, sir!
What's burglar signalling?
I'm making sweep to port. Have contact.
Contact?
Port's the direction the attack would have come from, sir.
Yeah, I know that. What's she signalling now?
I'm engaging, sir.
Good. Who's picking up survivors?
Acanthus is coming up, sir.
Tell them to hurry. Men don't last in these waters.
Burglars fired depth charges, sir.
Any result?
She's turning to starboard, sir. Slowing. Oh, another signal, sir. I've lost contact.
Damn! I think that was a contact, number one. As you said, it's where the U-boat would have been.
What do you intend to do, sir?
Sinking U-boats is our job, to discourage the others. I think a lucky U-boat captain popped up his periscope and there we were. The convoy can sail on with the other escorts. The chances of a concerted U-boat attack in this weather are virtually nil. I'm going to wait here with Pergola. She deserves a shot at him. See if he shows himself again.
Sir!
I know everyone's exhausted, number one. Everyone's uniforms frozen stiff in the sleet. No hot food for weeks, but it's what we do.
Yes, sir.
You have to admire him. When everyone else is dying on his feet and dreaming only of a warm bunk, he wants to fight. We start a long grid-pattern sonar search across the empty ocean, ploughing back and forth endlessly over the same area, waiting for a contact.
Anything, number one?
Nothing, sir.
Keep searching.
Oh, what time is it, sir?
3 a.m. We've been at it 8 hours. Fancy a cocoa?
Oh, that would be good, sir. How long do you reckon this will last?
Who knows, Stevens?
It lasted all through the night. The crew at action stations keeping going somehow or other on corned beef sandwiches. Never, ever again when this war is over will I eat a corned beef anything. The captain kept his watch, gimlet-eyed. And from below, nothing.
What's that?
Contact, sir.
Moving 35 degrees right.
Signal Pergola. Return with all dispatch. You take control, Lockhart. Fire at your command.
Sir, steer 35 degrees starboard.
Stand by depth charges.
She's not moving very fast, sir.
Must have hit her the first time.
Just below, sir.
Fire depth charges.
Number one, get up on the bridge.
Sir!
Look over there.
Oil, sir.
All over the surface.
We got her, sir.
We'll go round again, drop another pattern just to make sure.
So we did. But we had lost contact.
Congratulations, sir.
I'm not sure we got it.
What? But there was oil all over the surface.
They could have released it deliberately to fool us, then we lose contact.
That was it sinking, sir.
Number one, I don't buy that. I say we stay. Back to the same search pattern?
Yes, sir.
And so we resumed our search. Pergola quickly rejoined us, our crews fighting off the craving for sleep, plodding round and round the ocean like two old tramps doing the tour of their dustbins. The ship functioned, because that's what we'd been trained to do. On the bridge, It was as though there was a cordon between the rest of the crew and its captain. We scarcely acknowledged him, but he never flinched. Never before had I felt such anger that he would not give way, such pity for him. Then, just as we were alone, he staggered.
Sir!
I'm all right, number one.
I don't think you are, sir.
I know when I'm all right. Those pills. You know, those pills you can take that keep you awake for hours?
Amphetamines.
Give me a handful. Now?
Sir.
Sir! A contact from the sonar room!
This time it was real. Pergola went in, then us. And this time what rose to the surface was what was required. Woodwork, clothes, bits that looked like tripe and onions. Victory. Again, on the bridge, it was as though a cordon surrounded the captain, but this time of awe, respect. He had been right, we wrong.
Off to sleep with a lot of you. I alone will take the watch, for I alone have just swallowed 6 amphetamines.
Gosh.
This is it.
Yes. It belongs to a friend. The habitation's so remote, the postman only comes once a week.
I'll light the lamps, get the fires going. It's ice cold in here.
Bill?
Yes?
I took this cottage for a week so we could get away from everything. Try and become something else.
Yes. I hereby obliterate from my mind all Arctic storms, written orders, and things which arise from sinking subs.
And I, all protocols and coding machines, and the prioritizing of priority commands.
Let's do our damnedest.
I want better than that. There must be a better way of living than we live now.
I know.
But it was difficult. Old habits, reflexes, fears contain, constrain you like wet, frozen uniforms. Things got better. After supper, Julie rustled up some baked beans and sausages. I added a bottle of cheap but friendly Algerian wine from Gibraltar. We stood in front of a blazing wood fire and sort of danced.
This is good.
I couldn't think of anything I'd rather do.
Underneath it all, you can actually dance a bit.
I spent my youth gliding the dance floors.
Oh, really?
I'm Fred, and you're Ginger. Sorry.
It's more like the other way around.
And we kissed. And kissed some more. And then our uniforms, like rusty old armor, started to fall away bit by bit. The bit which demanded you always guard your emotions, because if you don't, mistakes might be made and people die. The bit where so many men throw themselves at you, your whole stance becomes defense. The fear a fighting man has of touching other human flesh. All fell away. Thank you.
When I was a girl, a young girl, I had this pony. And all alone, I used to ride it out over the Cumberland Moors. From Denton home up to Scratchmere Scar,
Over Troutbeck. And all the way to Uffertree and Branthwaite. All by myself. Hair flying in the wind.
Wonderful.
Where are you going? Why do you like this song so much? It's so melancholic.
Don't you like it?
Oh, yes, yes. But why do you?
Paris. J'attendrai. I just love Paris. Going there with a girl I love.
You've been to Paris with a girl you love?
I've been to Paris with several girls, but never with a girl I love.
Lockhart by name, Lockhart by nature.
You're the only woman I've ever loved, Julie. We should just go when we're free. The street life, the cafes, the art. Since we met, I've played this record over and over at sea. You don't realise how many complaints I've had. It's one of those songs that's crossed the lines, like Lily Marlene. I was talking to a lieutenant who met a German survivor of the Bismarck. He said it was the tune they chose to play as she went down.
And I said no mention of the war.
Sorry.
Give us a kiss.
Why is this war lasting forever? Simple. It's unbelievably incompetently run. If the Navy, if the British armed forces were opened up to the rigours of market forces, we'd be home by Christmas. Check.
Rubbish.
That's a fact.
So what you're saying is that soldiers should get a pay rise if they advance, a cut if they retreat?
Of course not. But we can all see the waste, the endless socialistic paperwork.
So businessmen should decide just how many depth charges we take to sea. Get great fat bonuses sat behind their desk while us doing the fighting get the pay cuts.
No. Look at the amount of air cover we're given by the RAF. Pathetic. All because that socialist idiot Stafford Cripps is running aircraft production. If we had proper, hard-headed businessmen
We had such inefficient private aircraft companies before the war, half the planes were obsolete before the flu. Now the government runs it, look at the advances. Radar, ASDIC, bomb aiming. Because the government's organised it from the top down. That's socialism. Organising science and research for the common good.
Rubbish.
Gentlemen, this is a respectable British man of war, not the House of Commons. Kindly pipe down.
Julie and I continued to see each other between convoys. We planned to marry when the war was over. She wrote to me saying she was pregnant, that she'd go down to London and deal with it. I telegraphed immediately saying no. We'd get married during my next leave.
Course north, 20 west, coxswain.
Course north, 20 west, sir.
The war was improving, at least for us. More escorts produced by our shipyards, better radar and sonar, air cover across the whole Atlantic. Special attack groups whose sole purpose was to intercept U-boats before they attacked us.
Sir.
Number one, the refit we're due.
Looking forward to the leave, sir.
Won't be in Glasgow. They've decided we're going to New York.
New York? Bridge.
Radar here.
Yes?
We've picked up an echo, a very soft echo, several miles south.
What's it look like?
Wreckage, or possibly the conning tower of a submarine.
Right.
It was only a faint print, but we went to look.
What do you think it is, number one?
It looks like mushrooms in a field.
Those are heads. The heads of survivors.
How long have they been in the water?
We soon found out. Heads held high above the water by their life jackets. All linked together by a rope.
Funny them not waving. All swimming towards us. Oh, God. What is it? Look. Just look.
Heads stared up at us. Seagulls had long since pecked out their eyes. A merciless sun had burnt their skin to parchment. Tufts of white, sun-bleached hair stuck out at all angles. And as the water moved and the rope jerked, every skull nodded and dipped as though in earnest conversation.
They must have been in the water for months.
Hold them up. We'll give them a Christian burial.
And with that cheerful omen, we sailed for New York.
Gentlemen, we will shortly be setting foot on foreign soil. This is an order. You will respect our hosts. You will not get drunk. You will not become involved in fights. And above all, you will respect their womenfolk.
Of course, like all military plans, this one did not survive 1 minute's contact with the enemy.
Don't never insult the king's flag, you lily-livered Yankee scum! We're best day when our country bled!
Hey, you whiny son of a bitch! That's my wife!
Sounds not what looks like!
I spent some time going to concerts, art galleries, very modern, abstract, writing long and detailed letters to Julie. But somehow I seemed to spend most of my time hauling sailors out of police cells and courtrooms.
Your honourable worship,
I'm a judge, for Christ's sake.
I do apologise, but this whole unfortunate incident seems to have occurred when able seaman Perks here, having assumed that Miss Misty here was a woman, and a most gracious woman I might add, later discovered that she was in fact a man.
I walked down Fifth Avenue, half in shadow, half in harsh sunlight, in my pocket a telegram from Glasgow, presumably from Julie about the baby. I entered an exhibition of Salvador Dali and sat down and read it. Julie Hallam is dead. Lost at sea, crossing the bay in a picket boat to attend a concert. A sudden squall overturned the boat. 20 other wrens died with her in cold, merciless waters. Commiserations. I looked around at the Dali. A giraffe, its neck in flames, the swiveling, raving head of Hitler stuck on a tripod. A drowned fetus. Dali understood war. I walked out into the dark half of Fifth Avenue. It soon got much darker.
Number one.
Captain.
You all right?
Yes, sir.
I heard the news. I can fix immediate compassionate leave. You need time.
I don't need any time, sir. There's a bloody war on. I'd rather do my duty.
Once again, I took upon myself the armor, the protection of the Navy.
We're not fighting this war for nothing, so we can return to the door queues, standing on street corners, bands with rickets and
You'll
TV.
You'll never change human
Our grands
nature.
And granddads being carted off to the workhouse, our children's lives blighted by crap education, while all the rich send their kids to Eton and land all the plum jobs, we won't let it happen
you
again.
You really think everyone's going to be idealistic and sacrifice themselves for others?
If we did it in this war, we can do it in peacetime.
You're a fool.
Gentlemen!
All this socialism might work for a few years, while the camaraderie, the illusion lasts. But people will get bored of it, you'll see. Start slipping back to the old ways. Greed always wins in the end.
By 1944, we'd gone a long way to defeating the U-boat. Whole convoys were crossing the Atlantic without a single sinking. Life on board became almost routine.
Course east, south 15, coxswain.
Course east, south 15, sir.
Sir? Yes?
Over there. A sail.
A sail?
Yes, sir, look.
And it was. In mid-Atlantic, dandy as a child's hanky, a tiny dinghy cheekily cut its way through the midst of the convoy, making way for no one, heading straight for us.
Lower the boat, I'll bring him in.
Seems to be sticking to his course, sir.
Bring her alongside. I'll board and speak to him.
A small man, hunched in the stern, staring ahead. I clambered aboard, turned to face him. He stared back. His bony hand clung rigid, claw-like to the tiller. I spoke. He didn't answer. Touched his hand, then lifted his hood. Death stared back, fanatic, at me. I lowered the hood.
Just leaving him in the dinghy, sir. Sailing on forever?
Yes.
Shouldn't he have a proper funeral?
No, he shouldn't.
I left him, doing what he wanted to. From Denton home, to scratch me a scar, up Trout Beck, and all the way to Affertree and Brunthwaite. Until now, we'd accepted death as part of the equation, but with our armies linking with the Russians in Germany, the war in its last few weeks, we knew a few people would still have to die. We just prayed it wouldn't be us. On independent passage from Iceland, we received the signal. Remain on patrol in immediate vicinity of Rockall. A calm, deserted ocean. We circle endlessly round a tiny piece of rock. Finally, another signal. The war was over. We were to await the arrival of two U-boats, which would surrender to us. And they arrived. Black, sleek, and arrogant.
Two submarines on the starboard bow, sir!
Look at their captain lolling over the side of his bridge as though he's on Bridlington Promenade.
Lieutenant Raitch!
Sir!
Fire a shot at him that parts his hair! Let him know who's boss!
With pleasure, sir!
Which we did. They fell into line astern as quick as naughty schoolboys. Beneath infinite blue skies, we escorted our final, unlikely convoy into the dark, cold waters of Loch Ewe. Late afternoon sun shone down, past long lines of silent, deserted naval vessels who'd already delivered their U-boats into captivity, who would probably never sail again in service. Past silent black lines of U-boats, their crews already ashore in captivity, our U-boats joined them. Then we too tied up. It was over. Suddenly, everyone was a civilian again, scurrying down the gangway, hot to rejoin the world.
Blaney?
Rex?
Is it true you all put yourself up as a Labour candidate?
There's a general election on the way. Why?
I had a letter from a council chump back in Walsall. Said the Tories are finished. Any chance of you putting in a good word for us with Labour?
The last of the sun caught the heather on the highest mountains. The stars came out. The lines of ships started to fade away, were swallowed in the darkness.
Rust. You can hear the rust eating into the hulls, fit for nothing but scrap. Sometimes I wondered if we'd ever see the end of it.
Sometimes I wondered if it was all worth it.
Of course it was. But it won't solve the thing. For all the terror and tragedy and suffering of this one, we'll be drawn into another. We love war too much. What do you think of it, Bill? Now at last we can talk as human beings again.
First, I think of all of us survivors. What we might have been if there'd been no war. The things we'd have done, the people we'd have met.
the world we might have had. But half the people we'd have walked the streets with, chatted and loved with are dead. We float on the surface of the water here, but beneath are all the flesh and bones and gobbets of the dead, those skeletons roped together. All the merchant seamen we pulled out just to bury again. That poor Wren girl on that convoy. Leading Seaman Phillips, Seaman Gregg, Stoker Donnelly, Yeoman Wells, Julie Hallam. And they aren't the worst. Lieutenant Ferriby's young wife with two children to bring up and a husband gibbering in a cell. That poor little kiddie, Seaman Gregg's tiny child, entombed in some orphanage in Stepney. The world we step into now. Part of us will be in the bright new world we all, Lieutenant Wainwright especially, will be building. But part will always be below the waters, among the dead. Our familiars.
In part two of The Cruel Sea by Nicholas Montserrat, Lockhart was played by Gwilym Lee and Captain Erickson by Jonathan Coy. Hallam was Tracy Wiles. Wainwright, David Seddon. Rakes, Gerard McDermott. Phillips, Peter Hamilton Dyer. Ferriby, Carl Prekop. Gregg, Harry Livingston. The operator, Adam Billington. And the coxswain was James Lely. The Cruel Sea was dramatised by John Fletcher, and the director was Mark Beebe.
In a couple of minutes, Alan Hollinghurst is the guest in Book Club. Looking ahead, next Wednesday, Stephen K. Amos and guests will share their thoughts on all manner of life's pressing issues, including raising children, pride and dishonesty.
My parents told all of us that people on TV could see you as well. I could never, ever watch Baywatch again.
Life, an Idiot's Guide, begins this Wednesday evening at 6:30.